Let's look again at Psalm 107. So we're in the book of Psalms today. So we looked at Psalm 32 this morning. And I mentioned that, as all of you know, I'm sure, that the Psalms is a very special book because as you open, you enter into the human soul as they engage with God. And there's Psalms that have maybe lifted you out of very dark places, I'm sure, and came at times when you needed it. Now, this one tonight, I think, particularly stands out. It's one of those psalms where even just the reading of it speaks very clearly. I don't think there needs to be much preaching on this. There's a story about this where in John MacArthur's church, so John MacArthur recently passed away, in his church, a guy from a very, let's say, opposite lifestyle. I think he was even from the LGBT community, and he got himself in a big mess, and he's seeking, and someone said, you should go to John MacArthur's church. So he turns up to church for the first time, and he's sitting in the back, and all that happens is, I think John MacArthur's preaching on this psalm, and he reads it, and just from the reading of the psalm, the man sitting at the back said, I need to cry out to this Lord. And then John MacArthur started preaching, and the man was getting annoyed, saying, can you finish preaching? I just want to find out how to call on the Lord. So it was actually the reading of the word that worked in this man's heart, and he just couldn't wait for the preaching to be over so he could come to the Lord Jesus. So that shows the power of God's words. And my fear tonight is that I might muddy what is a very clear and powerful psalm. So maybe I could just go and sit down and say, service done, read this psalm for yourself. But let's just try and open it up, because it's a beautiful psalm, and it really has one goal. I'm going to read you some verses throughout this psalm and see if you can work out the goal of this psalm, the main topic, the great theme. So verse 1, O give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever. Verse 8, let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love. Verse 15, let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love. Verse 21, let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love. Verse 31, let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love. Then finally, the last verse, whoever is wise, let him attend to these things. Let them consider the steadfast love of the Lord. I think you've worked it out, hopefully. This psalm is about the love of God. The great topic of this psalm is telling you about the love of God. But its great goal, if you're going to take anything away, is for you, what does it say, verse 43? Whoever is wise, let him attend to these things. Let him consider. This psalm wants you to consider, to attend to it, to focus on it, to take it in, that you might be moved, amazed, overwhelmed, give praise, give thanks. That's the goal of this psalm, that you might be moved by the love of God. Now, we need that. We need convincing of such things because we live in a world that tells us the opposite, doesn't it? We've lived in an atheist society for years, as I said this morning, and now it's moving more towards a kind of agnostic, I think there's something up there, there must be a God, but I don't have a clue who this God is. That's what we're surrounded by. Then there's religions that are painting God in all these sorts of pictures, if you look at religions. So a quick question for you. What comes into your mind when you think of God? What kind of thoughts do you have of him? What do you think he's like? Let me give you some quick examples today of what people think. Some people see God as a great grandfather in the skies, a distant grandfather that doesn't really have anything to do with us, distant, doesn't really interfere, you don't really see him ever, and he's kind of nice. It's a nice, distant grandfather. Other people think he's like this angry policeman that's waiting to catch you out. Other people see God as maybe this impersonal force that has no personality. You can't really know, it's just this force. All these different ideas, right? And the issue is that most of us, our view of God has been affected by what we've experienced down here, right? So it's very hard for us to imagine a God of, you know what steadfast love means? it's even hard to put into words, this Hebrew word for steadfast love. It's very hard to explain. It's talking about this love, but it's more, it's this loving kindness. It's this kind love. It's this unfailing love that never leaves you, no matter what. It's this loyal love that will stick by you. That's the kind of sense of this word when we're talking about God's steadfast love. We haven't experienced that. We rarely experience that in this life. Even the best examples, they're not steadfast love. So we find it very hard to believe that God could be like that because we've never experienced it ourselves. So we need convincing. And I love that the approach that this psalmist takes to convince us of the love of God. Did the psalmist give us 3 points? Did the psalmist give us a theology chapter? How did the psalmist seek to show us the love of God? Did you notice it when it was read in the psalm? The psalmist simply says, I'm going to tell you 4 stories of believers who have tasted it for themselves. So this is a testimony night tonight, basically. You're going to hear 4 testimonies of believers who have found and tasted the love of God for themselves. That's what we're going to do. 4 testimonies. And this is for everyone here. So Christians, I think you will identify with one of these groups. They're groups of people, these 4 stories. You are going to identify with one at least. I think I identify with probably 4 of them. All 4 of them in different ways. And what this is going to do, it should take you back down memory lane of what God has done in your life. It should take you back. It should remind you of where you were, where he's brought you. And you should be moved. You should be in wonder all over again. You should be revived and refreshed by the end of this. If you're not and you leave weary, then again, I've failed in this great task. But for others here, if there's anyone here who has never tasted the love of God, you've never found it for yourself, you've never known his love for you, you're going to relate to these stories too, but mostly the first part, which is all the trouble. You're going to know something of the trouble that these people felt, and maybe you're in that right now tonight. Maybe there's someone here that's out of their depths in trouble, and I don't have a clue as I look out at you who this is. But maybe there's someone who is drowning in the depths of trouble. You've just about managed to come here and you're sitting there and there's storms around you as you sit here still. This psalm is for you. So that's what we're doing. 4 stories. 4 stories about people who found the love of God. Firstly, first thing I want us to see about these 4 stories is who are these people? That's important. Who are they? Firstly then, we learn in verse 2, they're called the redeemed, right? That's what they're known as. So we're going to find out what that is later. But in verse 3, you start to notice that they're gathered in from all 4 corners of the world. Do you see it there? Gathered in from the lands, from the east, from the west, from the north, from the south. They're from everywhere, from all over the world. Now, many think that this is only talking about Israel in the Old Testament. When they were scattered to Babylon, you know the story, hopefully. Israel was scattered across to different parts and they were gathered back in again. Now, yeah, it's surely talking about that, but it's surely much more than that. Did you notice that Israel, the people of Israel, is not mentioned once in this whole psalm? That's very interesting for a psalm in the Old Testament. Actually, what are they described as? Verse 8, for his wondrous works to the children of man. Do you know what that man is in the original? Adam. Children of Adam. That's everyone. We're all children of Adam, right? So this is about the bigger work that God is doing across the world and today of saving people from every race, every religion, every class, the goods, the drunkards, the businessmen, the king, the celebrities, everyone. This is people being gathered in from everywhere. That's the picture here. So who are these people? They're a wide group. As you look at these 4 stories, you're supposed to see all sorts of people, every kind that you can imagine. Okay, but we zoom in because there's 4 particular types of people described. Now listen to this, because we're going to be some of them. Firstly then, the first group, verse 4 to 5. Some wandered in desert wastes, finding no way to a city to dwell in. Hungry and thirsty, their soul fainted within them. So that's talking about those, the type of person that wanders through life from one thing to the other, seeking some sort of satisfaction, seeking somewhere that they can call home, somewhere that they can belong. And they're trying everything. They're trying traveling, relationships, pleasure, etc., etc. Something worth living for. That's the first type of person. Now, don't we see this everywhere in our society today? Isn't that the classic description of the Gen Z? Not just the Gen Z, but many in this society today. So that's the first group then. Lost wanderers. Is that you? Is that your type? Are you the kind of lost wanderer that's always been going from this to that and never quite feeling at home anywhere, never feeling satisfied? Well, there's a second group. Let's meet them. Verse 10. Some sat in darkness and in the shadow of death, prisoners in affliction and in irons, for they had rebelled against the words of God and spurned the counsel of the Most High. Who? What's that kind of person? It's the rebellious kind of fist shaker kind of person. No one tells me what to do. God doesn't tell me what to do. It's the kind of person that would snigger at preaching, that would laugh at the idea of church and the Bible, maybe the atheist, maybe the outright criminal that just does what they want. They're a law unto themselves. Even the businessman that doesn't listen to anyone. It's a wide group, but it's the kind of person that no one tells them. They know best. They're their own law. So that's quite different to the first group, isn't it? Okay, then we get to a third group. Verse 17. Some were fools through their sinful ways, and because of their iniquities suffered affliction. They loathed any kind of food and drew near to the gates of death. So now we're getting another different kind of person. They're not quite the rebellious fist shaker. They're just people that just want to enjoy life. Just want to have a bit of fun. I just want to live for me. Live for the temporary. And it leads them to make stupid decisions. They're described as fools. They make decisions that lead them to ruin. They know it, but they make the decisions. So again, there's obvious examples of this, isn't there? The addict, maybe, that is constantly making... The guy that sells his house to bet. The alcoholic, the drug addict. The person that sleeps around knowing that they're harming others and harming themselves. It's that kind of person that is lavishly living, making stupid decisions just to live for themselves. Maybe there's more subtle examples, though, not obvious ones like that. So we're getting kind of three very different groups. But then you've got a fourth group, verse 23. Some went down to the sea in ships, doing business on the great waters. Here you've got those that are pursuing success. They go down to the sea, they're trading, they're making money. They're relying on themselves, really. And things are going well. The waters are smooth. They're sailing through life. They're looked up to. They're well off. They don't really have any problems. Actually, everything seems to be going well. They're the successful in life. So we've got four very different people. But notice there's something key in common with them all. I don't know if you spotted it. Every single one of them left God. They went away from him. Some wandered, like the first group, just wandering, looking for satisfaction elsewhere. Some shook their fist and stormed off, group two. Some just wanted to live for themselves and didn't want to listen to God's wisdom. They weren't quite angry and rebellious like the second group. They just wanted to make their own decisions. And then finally, the fourth group is just people that thought, I don't need God. I'm going to go off and make a success of things myself. So though they're doing it in different ways, they're all doing the same thing. They all went far from God. They thought they could go it alone. Even though, because we're trying to get the love of God here. So even though God is the one who's given them the life and breath in their lungs, and he calls them, come to me, be with me, they're all making the same decision, going in four different directions. He's in the middle, and they're going off in their four different directions. We don't need you. I don't need you, God. So I hope we're supposed to conclude it. We're looking at a bunch of sinners, basically. We're looking at not a nice bunch. We're not supposed to look at these people and think they're great people. All of them are painted in quite a very negative picture. So that's who these people are. Now, the point here is we're all one of them. All of us in this room are one of this group. Maybe there's shades of all of them in you because they're capturing humanity from four different angles, really. I wonder which one you can relate to the most. It's important because the psalmist wants us to personalize this. The whole point of this is that you might be moved by the love of God for you. So you're supposed to see who you are. Christians, which one were you? Were you the rebellious one? Were you just the one that thought you could go it alone by yourself and make a success of your life without God? Were you the fool that made stupid decisions that your body is still suffering from now? And anyone here who isn't a Christian, which one are you right now? Which one are you? What are you? Some of you maybe are doing this right now. Okay, so we've seen that they're all going their own way. There's a second thing to see, though. We've seen who they are. Secondly, where they ended up. This bit's really important because in their minds, as they're going off, each of them, they're all thinking, they've got big expectations, right? They're all thinking, this is going to be great. The world, sin promises it. It says, live for yourself. Do what you want. Be who you want. Don't go God's way. So they're all thinking they've made great decisions when they're going off doing their own thing. But look where each group ends up as they do this. This is the sobering bit of the psalm. Let's look at the first group. Remember, they were wandering off trying to find satisfaction outside of God. How did it go for them? Well, let's read verse 4 and 5 again. Some wandered in desert wastes, finding no way to a city to dwell in. Hungry and thirsty, their soul fainted within them. There was nothing. They wandered here, wandering. That word wandering is like zigzagging. It's like trying everything. This is basically saying they found nothing. They looked and looked year after year, relationship break after relationship, spending money after nothing. What a sobering thought. What a picture them in the heat. You're supposed to picture it under the heat of the sun, no water, no home, no city, and they're falling to the ground and they're crawling. That's people today. Maybe that's someone here. So that's the first group. Second group, remember the rebellious fish shakers. How did it work out for them? Let's read verse 10 again. Some sat in darkness and in the shadow of death, prisoners in affliction and in irons. They're in prison. They thought they were free when they walked off shaking their fist, but they've now somehow ended up trapped. Doesn't that picture the work of sin? You end up trapped in the very thing that promised you life and pleasure. Think of maybe the porn addict. They started off clicking on a few things, and then suddenly they're watching things they never thought they would, and they can't stop. That's the kind of picture we have here of the prisoner. They're in darkness. Darkness. Some sat in darkness and in the shadow of death. And it says, verse 12, so he, that's God, bowed their hearts down with hard labor. They fell down with no one to help. This is the idea of serving sin. I thought sin was a pleasure that I was chasing. And then I end up serving with hard labor, doing all these things. It's a sad picture of the rebellious when they go their way. They fell down with none to help. No one to help. Wherever they turned, alone. What about the third group? Remember them? They just wanted to enjoy themselves, have a good time, live for pleasure. Verse 17. Some were fools through their sinful ways, and because of their iniquity suffered affliction. They loathed any kind of food, and they drew near to the gates of death. So, what's happening there? Well, it's as they live this lifestyle, that it affects them. they suffer. Sometimes there's direct illnesses that come from sinful choices. We know that, right? But I think also there's a sickness of the soul. As you go further and further into sin, your soul starts eating that and you loathe any kind of good thing. I think you've seen that. Anything good for you, you've lost the appetite for and you're going for this, right? And actually it's quite sad because it's very self-destructive. It's almost suicidal, the picture here. They loathe any kind of food. In real life, that's a suicidal choice if you refuse to eat. So it's a very sad picture of someone who seems like they would rather die than carry on. It's very moving, these pictures we have of these three groups. So are you feeling some? I think we're supposed to feel something of the misery in these scenes. But then there's the fourth group as well. Remember, that was the one that seemed the best. They were successful on the seas, trading, making a great success of their life. How did it work out for them, the fourth group? Well, we read, some went down to the sea in ships, verse 23, doing business on the great waters. They saw the deeds of the Lord, his wondrous works in the deep. It's not a good thing. That sounds quite good at the beginning. Oh, the deeds of the Lord. But carry on reading. For he commanded and raised the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They mounted up to heaven. They went down to the depths. Their courage melted away in their evil plight. They reeled and staggered like drunken men. They were at their wits' end. So here we're talking about, I think we all know this. Life is smooth. You're sailing through smooth waters. Suddenly, something hits you and everything is turned upside down. Your life is shattered. Storms start raging around you and everything has gone wrong. That's the kind of thing here. We're talking about things maybe like the cancer scare that comes out of nowhere, the loss of a job, betrayal of a spouse, loss of a loved one, and you suddenly realize, I'm not in control. Have you ever had that? I'm not in control. Something comes out of nowhere. God shows his power. I'm in charge. That's what happened to this fourth group. So, very different troubles we've seen, right? Very different troubles. But again, there's common links, and this needs to come across. Did you notice in those four groups, every group hit trouble? They were very different, but all of them hit trouble. As all of them went their own way away from God, trouble came. Jesus says, in this world, you will have trouble. These are kind of types of all the trouble that... This is a hard life, isn't it? I remember there was a question in the Q&A at house party. Why is life so hard? It is. This captures the life is hard. For all four of these groups that tried to go through life, it was hard. They had trouble. But can we push it a bit further? Did you also notice that the trouble they had to go through was directly linked to their decision to live without God? That comes through, doesn't it? The fool suffered sickness because of their decisions. Do you see that? The rebellious fist shakers ended up in prison because they shook their fist. So we're supposed to see a connection that these people deserve it. That's the picture we're getting in this psalm, that the trouble they ended in was very much deserved. It's not saying that all trouble and suffering in life is deserved directly for your choice, but in these cases, we're shown that there is a direct link between the two. But did you notice this as well? That every trouble that we've looked at eventually came extremely serious. All of them is a death trouble. Did you notice that? Crisis. They're all heading towards death. I could read out the verses, but I think it came up. Every group, the trouble was so great that it was a life or death. That captures something of our trouble in life. Death awaits us all. But then there's one more thing. In every case, every group, each group was utterly helpless. Did you capture that? Verse 5, their soul fainted within them. Verse 12, they fell down with none to help. Verse 18, third group, and they drew near to the gates of death. Verse 27, the fourth group, they reeled and staggered like drunken men and were at their wits' end. every trouble was too much for them to handle. No one could help. There was nowhere they could turn to. They were stuck and heading for this horrible, inevitable end. Do you capture it? Do you capture the urgency, the crisis of these troubles? That's how it's being painted to us. Surely this captures our lives without God. Surely this captures our world. This is the story of everyone who's ever lived. That's what this psalm is saying. This is life in this world without God. Christian, non-Christian, we're all in this trouble-filled world where there's one inevitable end and no one could do anything to stop it. That's the picture in this psalm, all four corners of the globe. Do you feel it? But this is where the Christian starts to stand out. This is where the story changes. This is the bit I love about this psalm. From this point on, the psalmist repeats himself because every group did exactly the same thing. So now, thirdly, what did they do? They ended up in trouble, but what did they do? Now, I'm just going to read these verses and you're going to see my point. First group, what did they do? Verse 6, then they cried to the Lord in their trouble. Second group, what did they do? Verse 13, then they cried to the Lord in their trouble. Third group, what did they do? Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble. Fourth group, the proud, successful ones, what did they do? Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble. Do you see the point? The psalmist is repeating himself. They all did the same thing. They were in so many different troubles, but they all, what did they do? They prayed. They cried on the Lord. This is as simple as it is. The Christian was in trouble, and what did they do? Did they go to church? Did they start reading the Bible? Yes, I'm sure they did. But the point here is the thing that they did which stood out was they cried out to the Lord. And not kind of formal prayers. Lord, I need you. It's a cry. I can't go on without you, Lord. Picture it in every scene. The rebellious fish shaker in prison, he does it. He cries. Picture the people on the seas, successful in life, busy. They did it. They did the very same thing. Picture the sick person that's suffering because they did it. The wanderer wandering through the desert. All four groups did exactly the same thing. It's an amazing message being driven home to us. This was the point where my life turned around, when I finally cried out to the Lord in my trouble with my heart in Tesco supermarket. Why is this so key? Why is this point the turning point? Why is prayer so important? Because it's the kind of praying we're talking about here is that movement of faith in the soul, where the soul realizes, I've got nothing to help me. I cannot go it alone anymore. All I can do is call out to you. It's that moment where you give up. It's that moment where you stop trying to go it alone. It's that moment where you realize only Jesus can help me. Only Jesus can save me. And it's that point when you communicate and you ask him. That's what we're talking about here. It's this cry of faith. That's what stood out for the Christian. As you look around this world, there are many people in literally everyone's in those four groups of troublers. It's stuck in trouble. But it's only the Christian that took that step of that cry to the Lord. So that's what they did. But at this point, maybe a thought should come into the mind by the way these groups have been painted by the psalmist. We should be thinking, these people deserve it. They walked out on the Lord. They're suffering because of their choices. Why should God answer them? That we should be asking that question. The way this psalm has presented these four groups to us. So that's why now the fourth thing is actually the most amazing thing. The fourth thing, the final thing to see, is what God did when they cried. And again, I'm going to read each verse out so you capture it. Verse 6. And he delivered them from their distresses. That's the wanderers in the lost wanderers. Second group, the rebellious, fist-shaking prisoners. How did God answer them? Verse 13. And he delivered them from their distresses. The third stupid group that kept making foolish decisions. What happened there? Verse 19. And he delivered them from their distress. The fourth group that thought they could go it alone and make a success. When they cried, what happened? Verse 28. And he delivered them from their distress. Do you get the point? God answered the same way to all of them. No matter what they did, no matter how much of a mess they made it, no matter how much they shook their fist, God answered every time. The foolish drunkard, the prostitute, the religious Pharisee that thought he was fine by himself. I could list so many types of people, but the same thing happened when they cried to the Lord. And he didn't just answer, he delivered them. He delivered them from the crisis. Now, what's this crisis? It's death, it's sin, it's hell. We're talking about the greatest deliverance. We're talking about being delivered from the grave. We're talking about being rescued from eternal fire in hell. And all they did was cry. All they did was cry. But I want you to note as well, there was a personal note to the answer. Because did you notice each time the verse was repeated, he delivered them from their distress. It was a personal response. It wasn't just a blanket, all right, I'm going to save you all from sin, death and hell. It was that. But there was a personal touch to his deliverance. Did you find that in your life? The very thing that you were troubled by, he rescued you. Let's just try and think about that for a minute. So what did the wanderers find? Group one, verse 7. He led them by a straight way till they reached a city to dwell in. They were looking for home, remember? He led them home. They were thirsty, they were hungry. Verse 9, he satisfies the longing soul. The hungry soul he fills with good things. He gave them what they longed for. What about the second group? The rebellious prisoners, what was their great need? They were in darkness, remember? What did he do for them? Verse 14, he brought them out of darkness and the shadow of death and burst their bond apart. They were stuck in sin. They kept doing things that made them feel shameful. And what did he do? He burst the bonds. He broke them free from that horrible addictive cycle they were in. I can testify to that. There were things I was stuck in and God broke me free. What about the third group, the sick ones with sin that made stupid decisions? What did they find? Verse 20, he sent out his word and healed them. He changed their appetites so they longed for good food again. He healed their soul. What about those tossed about in the storm? That poor fourth group. I feel for them sometimes the most. Storms are scary. The storms of the soul. When there's turbulence inside you, is the worst. But what happened to them? Verse 29, he made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. It's beautiful, isn't it? He answers each distress and trouble personally. So I don't know what your trouble is at the moment. God can deal with that. Okay. I hope you're seeing something of the love of God. That's the whole point of this sermon. But just one more thing on that, just to really magnify this love of God. Do you remember that word redeemed? Verse 2. That's the name they're known by, the redeemed. What does that tell us? It tells us that there was a cost to such a rescue. That's what redemption is. There's a price to be paid for the person that's being released. What was the cost to save this group of wretched, trouble-stricken sinners? And this is the bit that should melt us, really, about the love of God. What did it take to save them? Well, who was the one he sent? Who was the Redeemer that God sent? We sung it. There is a Redeemer, Jesus, God's own Son. How did he save these people? Did he just say a word and they were released? He had to send his own son into this world in order to do it. He had to take all, there was no other way to save them. He had to take all those sins that they did. They couldn't be washed away, as we heard this morning, unless there was a sacrifice, unless there was someone else to take it, an innocent one. So Jesus had to take it. But what does that mean that he took our sins? Well, it means he took the troubles that came with those very sins. And it's amazing when you look at the cross, remember the four angles of troubles we were just looking at? The storms, the forsakenness, the prison. Remember all those troubles, the weariness, the thirst. Jesus endured all of that at the cross. As you look at the cross, it's like you're seeing the troubles here condensed into one moment of time where he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He's the one pinned to a cross instead of the prisoner that was trapped. Do you see my point? He's the one that said, I thirst, instead of these lost wanderers who were seeking for something and thirsting. He took the place. He didn't just take the sin, but the trouble that the sin brought. He took death itself and hell beyond. What love of God. It would have been amazing if God just answered and whipped us out somehow. But the way he did it, the cost that had to be endured, we must sit here tonight and say, what a wonderful God we have. How amazing is his love that he would do such a thing for such a wretched group of people that only cried out when they needed help. I hope the message has come across. Because Jesus now is the way back for the wanderer, the bread of life for the hungry. He will give the water of life for the thirsty, the light of the world for those who sit in darkness, the resurrection for those dying, the Prince of Peace for the storm-tossed soul. That's a hard bit to say. The Prince of Peace that says, be still to the storms of the soul. Whatever trouble it is you are in, Jesus can come. And why? As you keep asking, why did he do this? What was it about this group of four people? What drove God to answer? The only answer that comes back every time is love. His steadfast love, as we said at the beginning. Loyal love. We didn't stay loyal. He does. Okay, it's time to end. And I was struggling to end this sermon, actually. I think the best way to end it is how the psalm ends it. How the psalm ends. Verse 43. Whoever is wise, let him attend to these things. Let them consider the steadfast love of the Lord. So the psalmist has brought before you the love of the Lord by showing you four examples. And Christians, we're part of that, aren't we? It's real life. And what should we do with all of this? Well, the psalmist says, oh, if you're wise, whoever is wise, let them attend to this. Let them consider this. Why is it so important to consider the love of God? We could give many reasons tonight. And I think there are many reasons in this psalm. Did you notice one of the other bells that kept ringing in the psalm? Let them thank. Let them, every group it says, let them thank the Lord. Let them thank. If we were to consider the love of God, we would be a more praise-filled people. We would thank the Lord very easily. We would love to sing praises to him. We wouldn't complain so much. So I think there's that element to apply this. I could spend the last part of this sermon just saying, if we considered the love of God, as the psalmist is telling us, we would be a thankful, praise-filled people. We would also tell others. Did you notice it in verse? Let's find it. Verse 22, third group. Let them offer sacrifices of thanksgiving and tell of his deeds in songs of joy. You'll want to tell people. But I think the way I want to end this is very simple. It's so important to consider this love of God in the way that the psalmist is telling us, because we are still in many troubles. And there are probably people sitting here who are in troubles tonight. And if we were to consider this wonderful love of God, you would do exactly what these four groups did. You would cry out to the Lord, knowing that he will answer you. you would have an expectation as you cry. And I'm saying this and ending on this because that's what stood out in these people from everyone else. What stood out here with these four groups compared to everyone else in the globe? It was that they cried out to the Lord. That was where the turning point was in their whole journey. And it's not just at the beginning of the Christian life, it's throughout the Christian life. I cry out to the Lord in desperation still, as if I've never been saved. And I think we should, because life is still hard. Troubles surround us. Sin remains. I can't defeat it by myself. I'm living in a hostile world. Temptation. We need to keep crying out to the Lord. And it's as we remember his love, as the psalmist is trying to get us to do, that I will. If I think God is not loving, why am I going to cry out to him to rescue me? The two go hand in hand. So I'm ending it on that note, that if we were to taste and consider the love of God as the psalmist has been trying to get us to do, we would be a people that cry out to the Lord. And maybe there's someone tonight who hasn't been saved yet. Well, you need to know that God is a God of steadfast love. And if you were to cry out to him now, he would answer you. So I think I'm going to leave it there and we'll finish by reading verse 43 and we'll let the word speak. Whoever is wise, let him attend to these things. Let them consider the steadfast love of the Lord. So let's pray together. Lord, you have clearly displayed your love in a way that we cannot deny it. As we look at our own testimony, it is clear. But mostly, Lord, as we look at the cross, we can never deny that you are a God of steadfast love. We cannot, Lord. So we thank you that you've displayed it so clearly. And we just pray for each of us here that we would take it in. We would truly believe it. And we would be so convinced that we would be truly a people of prayer that cry out to you knowing that you love us, knowing that you are waiting to help, and knowing that you can deliver us from whatever trouble we do face. And even if you choose not to deliver us, that you will walk with us through whatever trouble it is that we are currently facing. And we thank you for these four testimonies that they did exactly the same thing. And we pray that we would be those people too. And we ask this in your son's name. Amen.